DICK'S Sporting Goods Kickoff Week.
Welcome to the Little Apple, Manhattan, Kansas, home of Kansas State University and legendary head coach Bill Snyder. Now in his second tenure here, leading K-State into his stadium. With him, Snyder brings what could be the best running back you don't know. Last year's leading rusher in the Big 12, Daniel Thomas. The storied UCLA Bruins provide the challenge on opening day 2010, making their first trip to the plains of Manhattan, Kansas. DICK'S Sporting Goods Kickoff Week from a sold-out Bill Snyder Family Stadium in Manhattan, Kansas, matching UCLA from the Pac-10 against Kansas State from the Big 12.
All right, welcome in. KSO Classic, Mason Voth, Drew Galloway here with you. And, you think classic. You're going to pull out some of the all-time games. We saw the Fiesta Bowl. That's a classic. 2003 Nebraska, that's a classic. Oh, the first win for Bill back against KU in 2009. Gross game, but it's a classic. What is K-State UCLA in 2010 doing on this list? Well, I'll tell you what it's doing on here. We've talked a lot about Daniel Thomas at times this summer, and we wanted a classic Daniel Thomas game. Now, there is one out there that is slightly better and would have been far more entertaining and goofy to watch. But the only way that we have that information is through Drew Galloway's eyeballs, because a 11 or 12 year old Drew Galloway was in the crowd in Denton, Texas to witness the Daniel Thomas Lance Dunbar battle. Nobody to my knowledge has posted that game in full from ESPN 360 online. So you have to settle for Daniel Thomas's second best rushing game of his K-State career. Said claims that the high was only 85 degrees for this game. That's the number one thing I remember from this game, is I thought it was miserably hot out.
Yes, that is the number one thing that I remember, was just how hot it was. Like, we've done games where, like, we've both been in the stands for, but like, this is the game that I think that I remember the most, like, and have the most memories from. But like, when I think of Daniel Thomas, which, by the way, we're going to be like in the fan club of Daniel Thomas. We've definitely mentioned him the most out of anybody in the last probably like 5 years this offseason. But like, when I think of Daniel Thomas, like, I think of this UCLA game. But also, like, Brian Smoller, if you're watching this, Kenny Lanou or Ryan Lackey, if any of you guys are watching this, send us that North Texas game.
Yeah, please.
Like, that game was bananas. And for some reason, again, I even have asked my parents about this. We just wanted to watch the Cats in 2010 playing Denton, Texas.
It's an easy drive. I would have been all over that if, you know, I was in a position to command my dad to do things. But I've mentioned before, us going to games, it was limited, not because we didn't have money. He just didn't like spending the money. And that is evidenced by the fact that 2010 K-State UCLA, this is in that grouping of like the 2007 NIT against Vermont, where I hold it really close to my heart, because very rarely until I got to college did I get to see K-State play good opponents ever. It used to not be a big deal. When I was the only child, my parents just tossed the three-year-old in the car, and we went and watched the Cotton Bowl against Tennessee. So I was there for that one. Then the second one came, and then a third one, and it's like all of a sudden, oh, great, we're going to go watch him play North Texas in 2012, Eastern Kentucky in 2011. You know, it was like, it was a godsend when somebody said, hey, we got tickets we're not using this weekend for 2015 TCU. It's like, oh, we're going to see the number two team in the country play. Didn't happen all that often, unless it was KU, but you know, that was essentially a glorified FCS game. So this game was special from that aspect. Like, it is the first one in my memory that I remember going to of, this is a real opponent that K-State is playing. And just, you know, that it's the whole day. Like, I can remember the tailgating beforehand, thinking it was crazy hot. I think it just had to do with the fact that, again, tight with money, frugal, smart with his spending. We were sitting at the very top of the east side, so we were just right there probably baking in the sun. But like, I've got good memories of this game, and it's one that I was excited to watch because Daniel Thomas deserves his due, and we can't forget about DT. It's weird because we've also talked a lot about, well, you should not overlook DJ Giddens because he came right after Deuce Vaughn. We know K-State's had great running backs. No, KSU yeah. Classic has essentially just turned into, hey, don't forget that like each guy had their moments in the sun where they were awesome. So we're going to get a lot of Daniel Thomas today and not a lot of anybody else because the game was, it was grosser than I remembered it being. And that seems to be another trend with KSO Classic is you go, you know, the middle parts of this game, whatever. Part of that has to do with the way that football goes is when you're in it, like you have the actual emotion and adrenaline pumping. Now that you're 10, 15, 20 years removed from games, you know the end result. So you're like, well, I know eventually K-State's going to win this game. So the how they do it isn't necessarily there. I need to see things that entertain me. And it's just not going to happen every single drive in a football game. But this one, maybe even more so.
Especially this one. The throwing of the football was not great in this game. But yeah, like you said it, I looked up what the weather was that day because I was like, I just remember this game being so hot when I was a child. But no, it was only like 85 apparently.
Yeah.
If I also wanted to do like more research and come prepared for this, I would love to know when the last home opener was that was not at night was. Like, it might be this game.
Yeah, that's a good question. All right, let's just look, this first road game moment for me. I was going to grab a pen and paper, don't have it. I am in my parents' house recording this because we had to vacate the property so the realtor could come show our house today. So, you know, hey, maybe you're a Cat fan, you're watching this, please buy my house. Please buy my house. Game Mason Voth game used house for any of you KSO listeners out there. All right, so let's try and think of this. So, we know 24 was the FCS opponent, 23 FCS, 22 FCS, 21 the home opener was
against Southern Illinois.
That was a day game. There you go.
Oh, that was a day game.
I'm pretty sure it was. Now we're going to have – it wasn't at night, was it?
It had to
maybe
be
it was. Why do I think it was during the day? Nevada was during the day.
Nevada was during the day, and it was like a bajillion degrees.
Maybe I've already just tried to block that game.
Southern Illinois was 6 o'clock.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't remember it. I guess the second Will Howard checked in the game, I probably checked out and said, okay, I'm – not interested in the outcome anymore.
I know when the first home opener or the last home opener that wasn't at night was. It was 2020. Arkansas State was big noon.
Big noon kickoff. Yeah, there you go. All right, well, we didn't have to go that far back.
Before that, it might have been the UCLA game in 2010.
Yeah, COVID year doesn't count. We know this for everything, whatever you want to chalk it up to. So, yeah. What did you think of the intro there? Because that was – pretty good for this era to kind of show all their motion graphics and all that. And that's one too, where like, those are the graphics that were in the last NCAA football video game in terms of most of them. They changed the score bug changed a little bit, but like the fact that K-State got center stage with the helmet right there when it first started is nice. And then once again, this has been the theme with it. You just don't see this level of production value for basically any regular game now in college football. There was 20 minutes of broadcast time focusing on this game before it even kicked off. And that is not going to happen. And this was a 2:30 game. Like, there were games before this. So like, this was middle of the day there. This wasn't just 11 a.m. welcome you in. It was, that's the thing that I take away from this the most is that these places used to really truly give a damn about the product, and now they realize that it matters to people and how their enjoyment of the game is, but it doesn't impact if they turn the game on or off. they're still going to watch, even if you put bare effort into it. Like, you know, K-State Baylor in 2022, when the announcers were calling their second game of the day and doing it remotely from Charlotte.
Which is funny that, like, that's where, like, production has gone. And you'd think that, like, when games were more regional and, like, you had to be in that part of the country to watch, like, the 2:30 ABC game, that that is when the production would be at its worst. And now that you can watch every game ever, that's when production would be at its highest. But yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, I miss the days. Like, now I would find it a little bit slightly annoying if there was 20 minutes of lead in and then kick, and it's a 2:45 kick. But it just makes the game feel so much bigger, because now if you do that, it's a 2:30 game, but the game won't actually kick until 2:45. It just comes on TV at 2:30. 98% of the time, they're not actually talking about the game that's about to kick off.
Yeah. All right. Are you ready to dive into this game in full? We start by going over and rating the uniform matchup. It's very low. This is the worst one of all time. 3.2 for me. Yeah, look, the K-State side of it, you're saying, well, that's the same thing as always. Yeah, but, you know, this old Nike template also mixed with, the worst that the jerseys look, in my opinion, is middle of the day in the hot beating sun. Like, they're just fully exposed. The helmets need the night lights on them and a little bit more flare, so they're not great, but that's not even what drags us down. It's the fact that UCLA and Adidas rolled out the worst looking jerseys I've ever seen. I mean, just absolutely atrocious. The only thing that UCLA has on here that makes you go, that's UCLA, is those helmets. I mean, this would be if, you know, when K-State had played Michigan in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl, they rolled out there in black jerseys or something, or, you know, so they did something really weird and you're like, I saw Michigan, but it doesn't really feel like I saw Michigan. This was so bad by UCLA. And them signing with Adidas and then Under Armour, they just killed their style for years upon years.
Yeah, the very first thing that I wrote down when I started watching this game was just how bad the UCLA uniforms were. I'm a little bit higher, but this is just because the K-State uniform, I kind of bag on it a lot, and I don't use it a ton when I play the college football 26, the traditional uniform. But the traditional uniform, I think, is still really, really solid. So, it drags it up to, a 3.8. So, still higher than you, but still, I think, by far the lowest of any of these. I think K-State-USC NCAA tournament game, that might be the number one for me throughout this entire off season.
Yeah, that could be. I could see it. I'm going through. I'm finishing up one little thing that I had planned for us here in terms of what we're going to discuss later on in the show, because there are some things on here that didn't go very well in terms of the show we're looking at. Anyways, we'll move on and I'll get into that a little bit further down the line. Normally we do starting lineups. Look, I could do it for you here. They'd be fun. Taking the graphics from the game broadcast, it was not entertaining at all for this one. They flashed them up barely, and it was that was boring effort there.
This was the lowest starting lineup graphic that we've had in this entire thing. And that's saying something, because last week, Darren Sproles, that picture was not Darren Sproles.
Yeah, they showed us a guy that was not Darren Sproles last week. Anyways, if you need it, just for reference, K-State defense, Brandon Harold, Antonio Felder, Ray Kibble on the defensive line. And then you also, and they zip through these things. It was not a quick, little, let me stop and read this. It was nope, you're not going to get to see it. Prazel Brown also on the defensive line there. And then the linebackers, Alex Rebeck, Jarrell Childs, Troy Butler. And then the defensive backs for K-State in this game, Terrence Sweeney, Steven Harrison, and everybody knows two of our favorites, I think, Tyson Hartman and Emmanuel Lemur, made up the safeties. This would just a little thing because I was listening on my way over to Hutch today to some of Scott Wildcat's Blitz Month episodes. And when he had the good chef Andre Napier on with him, they were discussing, you know, when's the last time that K-State had a safety duo like this? Because they were talking up VJ Payne and Gunnar Maldonado. And my immediate thought was like, I think they were both very good, obviously. You know, we put Ty Zimmerman in the Mount Rushmore of safeties. But like, are you thinking that those two guys would get to the level of Zimmerman and Hartman in 2011? Like that might, is that the best safety duo that you would go back and stop and say, okay, they may not be better than those two guys, but like,
That might be where I would go. Just kind of thinking out loud here. I mean, that is, if you're discussing like how great those two were and had the accolades, and like we put Ty Zimmerman in the Mount Rushmore of safeties, it's probably that. If you look at just safety play and like what they were, I have a big report that's coming out that's all about like unsung heroes of the Klieman era. 22, everybody remembers how good Josh Hayes was. Drake Cheatham was yeah, really, really good. So like 22 probably. Best trio of K-State safeties though, 2010. To go Lemure, Hartman, and David Garrett, that is pretty nasty.
Yeah, that's true. And we're going to talk a lot about David Garrett in this game. And he had just fun moments throughout the 2010 season galore, because he also had big plays in the KU game later this season. So
played in the wrong era. Oh my God. Could you imagine him playing in this era?
Yeah. He's exactly what Chris Klieman is looking for on defense, yeah, it feels like. Anyways, we'll get into more of that as the show progresses. K-State did not have to wait very long to get their offense onto the field. Kevin Prince for UCLA, they were talking about, oh, is he going to even play? He's, you know, all this. UCLA, yeah, he's playing. We're going to throw it three times to start. The K-State offensive line looked like this against UCLA. You had Fichetti, Kendall, Weibert, on the offensive line. And then the last two there were Kenneth Mayfield and Ethan Douglas, who only lasted two snaps. And then Travis Tannehill at tight end, Broderick Smith and Tremaine Thompson out wide. Braden Wilson, always Braden Wilson on the K-State offense. We've learned that, you know, just it feels like he played for 7 years in this era. He's in every game. And then Daniel Thomas at running back and Carson Kaufman at quarterback.
But if you want to know how lazy the ABC ESPN intros were, like one of the reasons that we couldn't just grab it from the broadcast, along the offensive line you only had three guys named, and then they did a second page for the other two offensive line.
Yeah, it was you know, there's a lot that I like about this graphics package. That's the one thing that I would say, you didn't think it out that much, especially if you also go and look at this, like they finish the offensive lineman and then they sneak the tight end on with the other two offensive linemen. It could have been better. But anyways, nobody really cares about that. I'm not as much as I seem to. Let's get into this with our recap. You mentioned, we already talked about Kevin Prince starts 0-for-3 throwing the football. So K-State immediately gets the ball. They're just methodically working it down the field. Aubrey Quarles, another great receiver name, had a nice little catch and pick up on this. And I mean, you just from the jump, this was going to be a classic Bill Snyder game. There were dumb penalties by both teams that you just go, can you not figure out how to play football for once in your life? There were timeouts used galore. UCLA thought they had stopped K-State at the 1 yard line on their first drive of the game, and a penalty because they had 12 guys on the field set up this opportunity for Daniel Thomas to score his first touchdown of the game.
And goal stop. Now it's fourth and goal again for K-State opening drive. The pitch to Thomas, Corral, touchdown, K-State.
Thank you.
Mike, you alluded to the fifth-year senior. Kaufman has been around. A check at the line of scrimmage based on the look of UCLA. He checks to that option away. And pretty simple there for the senior Thomas on the touchdown.
All right, and then Anthony Cantelli came through, knocked home the extra point, and it was 7-0 K-State.
That was a classic Bill 2.0 first drive, because that first UCLA drive, I'm not even joking, I think lasted 14 seconds because it's incomplete. Took about 5 minutes off the clock. Daniel Thomas had 7 carries on the opening drive. Also classic Bill 2.0, because they had already called a timeout on the play before when they would have scored on a Carson Kaufman quarterback sneak.
Totally overthought it, because then they didn't get it, and then the penalty, and
And then the other thing that I think is like notable, and like we'll get into the broadcast later on. Did you not think that it was weird that they like kind of brushed over the fact that that was not a very good pitch and it was a very good catch by Daniel?
Yeah, the pitch was bad. I first saw it and I was like, wait, did they not score on the opening drive? Like, how do you have Daniel Thomas and not score right here? Because I saw the pitch and the ball, I was like, uh-oh. But yes, great catch by Daniel Thomas. He could do it all, as we know. He could throw it. He could run it. He could catch it.
And they just kind of like glossed over it like nothing happened. But that I felt like that was kind of weird.
Yeah. And hey, rarely do we have PSAs in KSO Classic or the KSO show in general. But how much of the commercial did you watch, Drew, on this? Shout out to Io Saba on YouTube. He's one of our goats of this series for uploading these games.
First half, I watched more commercials than second half. Second half, I just kind of zoomed through.
All right. Well, there was a classic commercial from this era, more of a PSA about drunk driving. And we're going to play it in full because I think it's iconic. And also, I've got a story to tell that stems from it. I did not drink and drive. I'm not Mike Gundy. So, all right. Well,
there's no way to hide it. If you drive drunk, we will find you. Cops everywhere are stepping up enforcement and cracking down like never before.
Sir, have you been drinking tonight? Sir, have you been drinking this evening?
Sir, have you been drinking tonight?
Make no mistake. You will get caught and you will be arrested. Over the limit, under arrest.
Heck yeah.
That is a classic commercial from this era.
And so my brothers and I, whenever we'd have a flashlight for whatever reason, we would hold it up into each other's face and we would say, sir, have you been drinking tonight? Because of this commercial. And so there was probably right around the same time, because I was in middle school, getting ready to go into high school. Like one of my accounts online, like one of the verification things was like to confirm it was your account. You had to pick a picture to go with it, but there was only so many that it showed you that you could pick from. And one of them was a flashlight, and you had to put like some kind of saying or something attached with it. And so I put, sir, have you been drinking tonight? So that way I could confirm that it was my account. I think it may have been if you needed to reset or get information and you had to call them, you would have to tell them, okay, what's the picture and what does it say? So if I ever had to call these people, I would have had to have hit them with the, sir, have you been drinking tonight? So yeah.
Classic commercial from that era. And also like at first, when we watched the Fiesta Bowl and it had commercials too, I was like, oh, this is going to be a long video. But the commercials from the Fiesta Bowl and then this one, hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, and there were some iconic ones in here that you go, oh yeah. Like, you know, some, like this is like peak Taco Bell era where they're just, everything's on their menus, 99 cents apparently. There was the one that they were, you know, the everyday life's a roller coaster. I can't even remember what it's from, but it immediately came on. I was like, I remember this song on commercials all the time back then. And again, something later in the show that we're going to talk about from what age poorly is going to relate back to all of that. But anyways, game gets back going and we have our first defensive highlight of the game, thanks to Brandon Harrell.
Prince pressure, tucks it. Drop from behind. Brandon Harrell makes the stop on third down.
So Brandon Harrell comes through, gets the first sack of the game for K-State on 3rd and 6 as UCLA was kind of encroaching into K-State territory. K-State ends up getting the ball back. And I don't know about you, Drew. It didn't lead to anything scoring-wise for K-State. But the simplest way to describe what happened next on offense for the Wildcats was Bill Snyder was in his bag. I don't know that we've ever seen this much creativity from this guy in ways that kind of worked. Now, we have seen some moments through like the quarterback highlights or whatever else that he got a little creative and you're like, dude, this was not the time. Bad time, Bill. This was the right time, and it unfortunately didn't end with points. But back-to-back plays where Bill Snyder just said, screw it, let's go for it.
Give a defense any life.
Well, one of the things you're trying to do is create confidence in yourself and your entire football team from an offensive standpoint.
3rd and 5. Kaufman pumps and then hands off behind him. For a Kansas State first down, it's William Powell picking up the first. Again, I don't think we've seen a cloud yet. On the reverse, it's Thompson wrestled down.
So we got a Statue of Liberty and then a reverse with Tremaine Thompson off of like kind of a fake toss. Just that was phenomenal work there by Bill.
Two great and creative play calls back to back. One thing that like I just realized, like looking at that again, there were a lot of reverses in this game.
A lot of reverses for sure. Next up, though, K-State. Moving a little bit, and unfortunately, a candidate for worst play of the game is the series that comes up right here.
To let Masoli play this year for Ole Miss on further review. Fumble of the snap, UCLA recovers. Plays. 1st and 10. Prince keeps it and walks into the end zone. Touchdown, UCLA.
So K-State, they give the ball back, then they get it back. They're deep in their own territory, and what do you know? They fumble the snap, and UCLA very next play is gifted a touchdown. So bad news bears there.
Spoiler
bad news alert. Bruins.
Spoiler alert, that is my worst play.
Okay.
I felt like K-State was really in control at that point because you said UCLA's offense couldn't do anything in the first quarter. And for what it's worth, neither could K-State. It's outside of the first drive.
Well, if we're being honest here, UCLA got six. They kicked three field goals in this game, I guess. So yeah, they only scored two touchdowns. Their two touchdowns came off of just complete idiocy and laziness by K-State.
Yeah.
So I will just foreshadow. I am going to the other candidate for my worst play. Because it worked out. We'll get to it. I don't want to spoil anything. Anyways, UCLA scores. So we now have a tie football game, and they come back from break, or is it 10-7 at this point? Maybe might be 10-7. Now I watched this late at night, finished it up. It would be 7-7. So we're tied at this point. Kai Forbath comes on, makes the kick. We come back from break, and Kevin Prince is giving it to one of his receivers on the sideline, and I got thoughts on this one.
Down and now a 44-yard field goal to take a 10-7 lead.
Any question who the leader, who the quarterback? Look at the redshirt sophomore captain, Kevin Prince, getting the receiver, Ricky Marvray.
He's telling Ricky, though, Ricky, you got to come back to the ball. We could get a touchdown instead of a field goal. Extend your arm to create more separation between you and the DB.
So that was after the Forbath field goal. So it was 10-7 there when they come back. And Kevin Prince, look, dude, I get it. You're trying to be a leader. You think this is how it works. You're not good enough to be doing that to guys on your sideline. Not good enough for that. You have to be, you know, you have to actually be contributing to your team in a good way as well. Not, you know, incompletion, dirt ball, you know, that kind of thing. He's not good enough to do something like that. Screw off, Kevin Prince.
I think both guys were at fault because, like, Kevin Prince was, like, about to shove him. But number two, like, if you're the receiver, you always got to pay attention because he's your quarterback. Like, the receiver looked like he wasn't giving Kevin Prince the time of day, which was weird.
I would not have either because he's Kevin Prince. He's not anything special. It's like, you know, when I was a senior in high school, I had never gotten in trouble in school in my life until my last month of high school. I think I got called to the principal's office twice. One, I own up to it. I stand by what I said and did, but I own up to, like, okay, I can see why you might be offended by what I did. The second one, totally unreasonable. Me and one of my buddies just messing around in the hallway off to our English class, and this substitute art teacher is down there, and she's like, there will be no fighting in my hallway. And we're like, okay, we're not fighting. Like, we're just screwing around. Like, we're friends, like, all this stuff, whatever. And so we're just like, okay, we're going to keep walking to class, trying to get to the stairs. And she's like, no, wait right here. She's like, I'm writing your names down. And it's just like, for what? Like, so we're standing out there and we're waiting. And the, you know, this lady walks by that was like an aide in one of our next classes. And she's like, what are you guys doing out here? I was like, well, she thought we were fighting. So she's writing our names down. And she's like, oh, you guys wouldn't fight. You guys love each other. I was like, yeah, I don't know, whatever. So she comes back, she's writing her names down, and it's like, I'm not giving her any time. So when she asked, she's like, what's your name? I just went straight-laced, full name for her. I said, Mason Douglas Voth, and just walked on. Like, I had no respect for her. She was in the wrong, and she was a substitute teacher. It's like, you know, I'm not degrading the subs. I'm degrading her as a sub, and the sub made her lesser. You know, it's like, I'd have to give at least a little more respect. Even if I didn't think you were a good teacher, it's like, well, you work here full time. I'm going to see you on a regular basis. Like, you do have some authority in this building. Mrs. What's-her-name, who just helicoptered in from sitting on her couch yesterday on a Wednesday afternoon, all of a sudden it's her hallway, and she's going to tell me that I'm in the wrong? Like, you know, whatever. That's this thing. Kevin Prince was that substitute teacher, so screw off, Kevin Prince. Anyways, David Garrett also told Kevin Prince to screw off because – here he comes. UCLA thinks they might do something into the half. Instead, they give K-State an opportunity to score before the half. They ultimately don't, but we get another big defensive play, and it's courtesy of David Garrett.
Yeah, after the 15-yard game to Franklin, Prince rolling. Pass is intercepted. David Garrett makes the pick. With 8 seconds to go before the half.
That's the third time we've called his name today associated with either breaking up a pass or catching the ball again. Tremendous effort by him. Make sure he caught it, I believe, but just great defense and great quickness.
So the man they call Rack comes away with a pick, and K-State had executed a little bit better. Maybe they're able to give Anthony Cantelli a chance to kick a field goal. Ultimately, they weren't. They had to go down 10-7 at halftime.
Probably would have been nice to have one of those timeouts that you called on the first drive.
You know, you think about it. You think about those sometimes.
Again, spoiler alert, I think that's pretty easily the best play of the game.
Oh, okay. All right. I've got an even better candidate for play of the game in my eyes, kind of. I got a couple of them. We start the second half in K-State just born again. They don't do anything unless it's the first possession of a half. And here comes Daniel Thomas, where his first half was sneaky good. His second half was loud and in-your-face good.
More year for Tannehill. Setting up third and two. Out of the eye. Option. Kaufman. Pitch. Thomas. First down. K-State and more. Daniel Thomas rumbling into UCLA territory. Thomas finally dragged down by Raheem Moore inside the UCLA 30. Powell in the backfield on first down. Missed tackle allows Powell to rumble inside the 10. And into the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas State.
So Daniel Thomas rips off a big one to set things up. And then he needs a breather. And William Powell says, hey, I'm just going to finish it off. And they had a nice little relationship going there. What you remember in biology, Drew, what is it called when you have two animals that they've got a relationship that neither of them harm each other, but like it benefits both of them?
Could not tell you.
I think it's a symbiotic relationship. I'm confirming right now. Yes. Here you go. A symbiotic relationship in biology is a close and long-term interaction between two different biological species. These relationships can be broadly categorized into three main types: mutualism, commensalism, and parasitism. So it would not be parasitism because, you know, he's not parasiting off him. It's not doing anything bad. I think it would be mutualism, you know? Yeah. You're getting the rest, or at the very least, it's for sure commensalism in terms of William Powell. He's getting something here. Daniel Thomas, it's like, eh, whatever. Although maybe there was beef and maybe Daniel Thomas was like, this is a parasite thing. You're taking my tutties, boy.
This was about the time in the game where you could tell that K-State was just going to out-physical UCLA the entire game.
Yeah, though just, well, you know, Los Angeles, California, of course, Manhattan, Kansas is going to be physically tougher. A bunch of weak little boys out of there. There you go. You can see from the stats in this game, yeah, Daniel Thomas had a great day. If William Powell hadn't been stealing his shine, it would have been a 300-yard day. You just, that's how math works. You take William Powell's yards and you give him to Daniel Thomas. But yes, big day for the Wildcats in that category. So K-State on the board again. They take the lead back. Everything's going well, and it's about to get a whole lot better for the Cats because that big, dumb, idiot quarterback, Kevin Prince, he screwed up again.
Play fake. Prince, toxic, scrambles for a pickup of three, maybe four, loose football.
The official referee is signaling the ball down. Again, Prince making something out of nothing. Covered down the field, tucks it, and gets 3 to 4 yards. Contact, second down.
Prince down by contact is the call. Harold makes the tackle.
After further review, the runner was losing control prior to being down. The ball was recovered by the defense at the 38-yard line. It'll be Kansas State ball, first and 10 on the 38.
And all the best laid plans of mice and men go right down the tubes. The ball was starting to come out.
What is Mike Bellotti talking about there?
Explanation that the ball was beginning to come loose as Prince hit the ground, and a great job of explaining why this was overturned.
Right there, you see he did not have control. That was the swipe knocked the ball out.
We kind of skipped ahead there in terms of like the ruling and stuff. So you don't even hear beforehand. These guys kind of are wishy-washy on if it's actually a fumble. The ref says that the ball was coming loose. No, it wasn't the ball was coming. It was firmly knocked out. Like it was a clear as day fumble. They had trouble with that. There's, you know, the one earlier in the game, they confirmed a fumble. I just went, I don't know that you can confirm that, but yeah. Hey, what are you going to do?
We haven't talked much about the broadcast yet, which means that it was just kind of there. And that's kind of how I described it. But like one of the notable moments that I put from this broadcast was actually how like blatantly wrong they were when they were going over this review. Like all three of them were convinced that it wasn't a fumble until they ruled it a fumble, and then all three of them flipped to being like, oh, yep, that was actually a great call.
Yeah, just, you know, what are you going to do here for these sad sacks? Anyways, we'll get on with it, and we'll find a little bit more goodness in this game because there wasn't a ton else that was going to happen in this quarter, but we do get another Daniel Thomas run that we need to highlight for you.
We touched on it earlier. It has been quite a journey for Daniel Thomas to get to this point. Featured back, Big 12 school. Taking the second down handoff, cutting it back across midfield, running away from the UCLA defense again. Dye tries to run him down to the 26.
So another run for Daniel Thomas. It results in a K-State field goal. And that right there, like one of many highlights throughout the day where it was tough for UCLA to get Daniel Thomas to stop running the ball. We have yet another big Daniel Thomas run. This gets us, we jump way ahead. You talk about lulls in action. Here we go. We send it to the middle, late portion of the fourth quarter, and this is where things really explode in this game.
Up in the middle of that UCLA defense. Thomas gets the first down carry. Room to run. Daniel Thomas breaks free. Penalty flag coming up. It's Akeem Ayers with a late hit, which will tack 15 more yards onto the end of the run by Daniel Thomas.
So a nice run by Daniel Thomas, an even nicer dumb penalty committed by UCLA. Their top player on defense, by the way. He'd been doing things earlier in the game. They were highlighting last year he had three defensive touchdowns. He struggled in that moment to keep his cool, and it gave K-State a free 15. They eventually get down in a goal-to-go situation. We have back-to-back plays coming here for you. One includes the ultimate touchdown that K-State scored here that pushed them out in front by 8. It also, before that, includes another Daniel Thomas highlight that isn't totally like a crazy highlight, but it just is another one of those things like, of course he did.
Wildcat for the Wildcats on 2nd and 10. The jump pass, he comes down with it. Traveling was nearly called, but Thomas hangs on to it and picks up 5 to the 5. This is 3rd and goal from the 5. Carson Kaufman took last series off. It was a 3 and out. Kaufman, Daniel Thomas, William Powell guiding the Kansas State offense down to the 5. Play fake. Touchdown, K-State, Broderick Smith.
Good little play design there. They kind of hide Broderick Smith. He ends up scoring the touchdown. But the play that really I was trying to highlight was Daniel Thomas ready to attempt the jump pass, fully jumps and still picks up 5 yards after aborting the jump pass.
Yeah, that play like highlights how great of an athlete and how great Daniel Thomas was that he could jump up for the jump pass, come down, and then get 5 yards.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, that's Bill in his bag on that Broderick Smith play. That was like a play that would be ran in 2025. Even.
Yes, very much so. And now we have to give my candidate for the worst play of the game for K-State. It about cost them. They gave up back-to-back big plays when they give the ball back to UCLA. And just like that, the Bruins have the chance to go ahead and tie this game up.
There are some highlights of a fourth quarter drive. Prince to the air, complete to the tight end Corey Harkey, who goes rumbling inside the 30. You who are watching UConn and Michigan, a good one here in Manhattan, Kansas. UCLA and K-State down to the wire. Prince to the end zone, caught, touchdown, Ricky Marbray. UCLA is a 2-point conversion away from tying this game. Two huge pass plays from the biggest question mark for the Bruins, Kevin Prince. Would he play? How effective would he be? And he leads the 2-minute touchdown drive in less than a minute.
I mean, just, you know, two plays. Let's not play defense. Let's just, tough go of it.
For how good Tyson Hartman was, that effort on the touchdown pass was about as bad as it gets.
Probably just best if you try to say everybody screwed up there. Don't worry, because our boy Kevin Prince did not convert the 2-point conversion. Whoa. Here's that failure.
Okay, not his fault, though.
I'm going to say kind of his fault. I'll tell you why when we come back. Evaluate this play.
Pistol. Franklin goes wide, empty backfield. Prince tosses incomplete, intended for Embry.
So there you go. He ends up, you know, doing his thing and throws the incompletion, and K-State is able to eventually get the ball back. We'll get into that. Here's the thing. Here's what I'm saying, why I think this is partly on Kevin Prince. You think he should have just taken off and ran it?
I mean, he's not making it even if he runs.
You don't think? Let's watch this again.
Pistol. Franklin goes wide, empty backfield.
Right here, take off.
Prince tosses incomplete, intended for Embry.
David Garrett lights him up. Kevin.
Yeah, he probably gets caught, but I didn't. I think he was just a little too non-committal there. You know, he's not Skylar Thompson buying time at the goal line. Like, you're not going to hit your receiver and he's going to catch it.
Well, to be fair, he did hit his receiver in the hands.
Well, you know, you can't always expect him to come down with it. You know, you run it in, you don't have to risk trying to catch a ball. I don't know. I wanted to put more on Kevin Prince. Here is one of my candidates for best play of the game, Drew. There's a couple plays left that it could be. You want to take a guess what's next?
It's got to be the DT run to make it 31-22.
That is a candidate. I don't think that's the answer I'm giving. It's a play that happens before that.
Puts it in the air. Recovered by Kansas State. Wildcat football with a minute 19.
Tannehill with maybe the biggest play of his young career, recovering, catching the onside kick.
How many times did we talk about UCLA's receivers today waiting for the ball to get to them? Tannehill, perfect execution. High point. You go up like a rebound and snatch that ball out of the air.
Power forward right there in basketball.
So there you go. Travis Tannehill recovers the onside kick. I think was maybe the most impressive play in the game, was a tight end like that. Like, and look, I think Travis Tannehill was one of the better tight ends at K-State, and certainly one of the more memorable ones for the era and teams that he played on. But like, and he went up and got that. I was pretty impressed by that. And I'd be interested, like, what he would view as his, like, maybe he doesn't even remember doing that. But also, that feels like one to me where a guy like that would say, if you just randomly were like, hey, what's the best play you made at K-State? And he'd probably tell people, well, you probably don't remember, but I caught the onside kick that UCLA had in 2010. Because, I mean, he got up there and going backwards and made sure he secured that so K-State could win the game. So that is my candidate for my top one for best play of the game.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with you. Like, that was a very impressive play. It was actually on my short list too, but I figured that you'd just go with the DT play because this is essentially like a DT trivia video.
Well, it is. And this could start another Mason Voth rant. We've got a Daniel Thomas kill shot for UCLA.
Third and one. Thomas. First down. Touchdown. K-State. Daniel Thomas and the Wildcats run away from UCLA.
That's a grown man decision right there by Daniel Thomas. That would go to, I think, John Kearse's favorite line in K-State history is Mitch Holthus's, forget the first down, go for the business. That's exactly what that was right now. All these pansies in 2025 want you to, oh, first down, get down. Oh, let's be respectful. Oh, let's make sure. UCLA is not scoring 9 points in a minute with no timeouts, especially when you got Travis Tannehill skying above everybody else to catch onside kicks. When the touchdown is there, go take the touchdown. Just twist the knife on them.
No, I'm for it too. I love that he chose to score, but also Carter Blackburn, that's some fortitude to say touchdown K-State when he was at the 10-yard line.
I love that.
It would have been hilarious though if we would have saw
early Daniel, ball drop.
If we would have saw Daniel Thomas like go down on purpose at the one.
After
Carter Blackburn saying that.
There's only one broadcaster that would happen to.
Tim Brando.
Yeah. Yes. That man loves to call a play before it's halfway through and he's almost never correct. How many times do you think he said, deuce on the loose, he could go, and then 2 yards later he's tripped up? It's like, ah, Tim, use your freaking eyes. I know you suck at this, but man, flick them on. I would also say I hate when people are like, oh, what a smart player, like going down right there, you know. It's like, I think some guys just are whatever. They score the touchdown. It's there. It's not happening. Like, I understand if this would have made it a, you know, you score and then you kick a field goal and then it's an 8-point game. Okay, yes. You're up two scores here. It's going to take more than a minor miracle for UCLA to win this game.
Even the guys that got praised for doing something like that, when like you still need to kick a field goal and then make it, like, I don't understand that praise either, because then like – you could have just scored a touchdown and essentially won the game, because you would think that your defense isn't going to allow 75 yards in like less than a minute. And instead you put it on your kicker.
Unless you're the K-State defense in this game.
That actually has to like make a kick. Because, yeah. like, you're not smart if you do that, and then the kicker misses, and then you go to overtime anyway.
One final play to toss in here. There's really nothing impressive about it because Kevin Prince, just another terrible mistake on his part. But he, I think, got confused and thought that Terrence Sweeney was his intended target.
Prince to the air on second down, and that will do it. Terrence Sweeney with the interception on the floating pass from Kevin Prince. Kansas State football, 25 seconds left. Bruins don't have a timeout.
So there you go.
We should have also tried to return it.
Yeah, he should have.
Also, wearing number 16 as a corner is wild.
Yeah, it's kind of awkward looking, I would say, but you know, whatever. I'm not gonna kill you for it and everything. That is the highlights from this game and the recap. K-State wins at 31-22. Over UCLA. That means it is time to get into our categories from the game. Drew, you already said it. Your best play in this game is?
The David Garrett interception in the first half. The second most athletic play, because I think that the Travis Hannahol one is probably the most athletic play. But also, just stop some UCLA momentum, because they were the team that looked like they were going to go in and yeah. kick a field goal before half, because Kai Forbath was incredible in this game.
Yeah, we're going to talk about UCLA special teams in a little bit. My best play, I had down either DT twist the knife or the Tannehill onside. I'm going to go with the Travis Tannehill onside. I think that, you know, because we're going to do another game in the future where an onside kick is involved. And those are wildly stressful moments where it's like, oh my goodness. We should win this game, and now it's up to this dumb luck onside kick bull crap. And you just want a guy, you want a Travis Tannehill that's going to go up and grab the ball and grab the win. None of this, oh, let's let it kick around and one of us is going to fall on. No, go up there and catch the ball. And Travis Tannehill did that, so I'm giving it to Tannehill for the best play. Worst play, I already said mine. It's absolutely K-State going up 8 and then letting UCLA just shred them on 2 plays. To have the opportunity to tie the game, it's just inexcusable. That, we talk about the onside kick, that also is just a classic, oh yeah, of course, K-State, no nice things. It can never be easy. Even the games you win cannot be easy.
And that's a good one, but mine is still the fumbled snap, because it felt like K-State could potentially run away with the game in the first half at that point, because UCLA had like 4 yards.
Yeah.
And then you fumble a snap and UCLA scores in one play, and then K-State's offense forgets how to do literally anything the rest of the first half after that.
And it really did. K-State really did dominate this game. UCLA got 13 of their 22 points off of gifts with those touchdowns. Their only touchdowns in this game came because K-State just wrapped it up and handed it to them. We move on, though, now, and we start with what age well. This is more of a nostalgia play. It doesn't look that good, but it's always going to have a spot in my heart. I've already talked about, you know, old veneer and how the guys had to walk down and all this other stuff. I want to give a shout out to old Wagner Field. Good memes of the field looking like that. I kind of like when teams leave the end zones green and then only the letters have the coloring on it. So, RIP to the old Wagner Field.
I like the coloring in the end zones, but we know that because I put that as what aged poorly in the 09 KU game.
True. Very true.
I have a funny first what aged well. Playing UCLA and Insider 2.0, you know, you play them in 2009, Bill's first year back, and lose. Play them in 2010 and win. And then you play them in 2016 in what a lot of people thought was going to be Bill's last game. And it wasn't the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl, and it wasn't the Rape Bowl. It was whatever was in between.
Well, and yeah, thank goodness Rick Neuheisel was a little classier than Jim Mora Jr.
In the Alamo Bowl. So you played them 4 different times and Bill.
That's true. Yeah. Against 3 different head coaches. Snyder 2.0 played UCLA 4 times, 3 different head coaches in that, right? Or Yeah. Neuheisel was the coach in 09. So there you go. Yeah, you had Neuheisel in 09 and 2010. And then you had in 14, Jim Mora Jr. And then 17. That was when Mora had gotten fired, right? And so yeah. Jed Fish was the interim coach.
Yeah, Jed Fish. And then Chip Kelly was about to be the coach.
Yeah. So how about that? K-State, kind of the king of playing teams with fired coaches in bowl games. I was watching highlights of the LSU-Texas Bowl again, and it's like, oh, yeah, there's Brian Kelly just talking over like a Malik Knowles touchdown or something. The other thing that I had down here for what age? Well, Brock Huard. You mentioned beforehand that like it kind of seemed like this was this crew's first game together. You could even tell in just the way that he was into it and breaking it down. I think Brock Huard's one of the better analysts on games right now in college football. Well, used to be because he's taken this year off so he can watch his kids play, which admirable. It's just going to be tough on everybody's ears to not have Brock Huard out in the game right now. But like he is a college football broadcasting star, and he's one of those that you don't really have the ascent that Joel Klatt did because regional TV isn't anything anymore. Like you watch some of those old FSN games and there's Klatt and he worked his all the way up to be the number one on Fox. But like Brock Huard is that kind of person that could have that ascent to where if Brock Huard's calling the number one game for Fox in 5 years, you're okay with it. Like him and Benetti very easily could be the number one for Fox. And I think it'd be a better combo than even Gus and Klatt together right now.
Those two are so good that it doesn't feel like they're the number two for Fox. Like they
feel like the Big 12's number one, essentially.
Here's my announcer broadcasting hot take. Benetti and Huard would be the number one at ESPN/ABC.
Whoa. Is that because Kirk kind of cries too much now about everything? He's a little whiny.
It's because those two are just a lot better. I also had Brock Huard as my on one of the things that aged well. another funny one. But K-State getting kind of like screwed over on a review of a spot in Bill 2.0, because there was like an egregious one in this game in the first half. And I was like,
Well, it also feels like just, you know, all these Bill games were like, that aged well. Poor clock management skills at times and timeouts and delays of game. Yeah, it happened in this one. What aged poorly in this game? A couple of things that I'll throw out.
Two things that aged well.
Okay, rip them off.
Two things that aged well. One, this guy like barely got in, but you could see him on the sideline more. Chris Harper.
Mm-hmm. He did catch one ball, right? I think he caught one.
And then Colin Klein came in relief of Carson Coughlin for a little bit. Did not play well.
Yeah, sucked that he didn't play well. That would be a what if for me. It's just like, what if you just tried to take the training wheels off Colin in 2010?
Did against Texas.
Yeah, and it worked out pretty well. My what age poorly here. First one, ABC's 2010 fall lineup. just promos left and right for shows that I'm like, I've never heard of that show, and that doesn't look very good. And so I looked a couple of them up, Drew. The two that were being promoted harder than any of them was a show called Detroit 187. It was a police procedural drama featuring Michael Imperioli. I think this is his first gig after The Sopranos. Did not go well. One season, canceled after 18 episodes. The other one starred Michael Chiklis in a show called No Ordinary Family. And the premise, I guess, was that this family, something happened where they gained special powers after they survive a plane crash in the rainforest, and it got canceled after one season. It made it 20 episodes, but there you go. So that was my first what age poorly. The new shows that ABC tried rolling out in 2010 did not go well. Now look, they also had some classics that were already on the air. They had a promo at one point during this, great timing by them, congratulating Eric Stonestreet on his Emmy win for Modern Family. So right audience to do it for. Dancing with the Stars, which I think is still going. Like they've got that rolling. Grey's Anatomy had one. They had some great shows, obviously, but the new ones they tried, no staying power.
My first what aged poorly is the week one slate of 2010. Like, the reason this game was played at 2:30 in the afternoon on ABC was because the rest of the country's games were horrible.
Well, and they had just said beforehand that, like, every 11 a.m. game was a total blowout that day.
Yeah.
That there, like, were no good games.
Like, a 7-5 UCLA versus 6-6 K-State from the year before was, like, the third best game of the weekend. Yeah. When you really look at that slate, like, it was brutal.
Oh, real quick, I want to add this. You said on your what age, well, K-State playing UCLA in week one.
Yeah.
Just to build off of that, this is what week one should include more of, is I'm not necessarily asking it of the top teams in the country. Like, I don't need, if you're going to be a top 25 team, I don't want you to be playing like a game that you could lose. Like, you want to build some suspense with these team seasons. And this is why this would be an argument for why scheduling should not be done so far in advance. Having games like K-State, UCLA in week one, like, that's a perfect week one matchup to get college football excited. It's a good game that you can put on ESPN or ABC because it's going to have two power conference schools that people have heard of, but there's not high stakes attached to this. Like, this wouldn't be like 2012 K-State if the home opener had to be against Miami. Now, we know that K-State ended up, you know, running right through them, but at the time you would have gone, God, I hate having to open with Miami. Like, it was nice that they were able to ease into it with that FCS opponent. And then North Texas maybe was game two, so then it was Miami. I think they did Missouri State, North Texas, then Miami. Like, that's nice for those type of teams. We need something like this where you have, okay, you're one of our middle-tier teams right now. We're going to have you play one of the marquee week one games.
We're kind of getting that this year when Baylor hosts Auburn.
Yeah, that's a great week one. TCU North Carolina, like that. TCU North Carolina is a perfect one. Those are two teams that I don't think are going to be in the top 25 at the end of the year. Like, perfect.
But it's a good barometer of where both teams are.
Yeah, we're thinking about TCU. Colorado was great for everything. TCU's really good about playing week one power conference. They played Stanford last year on the road. Anyways, my last what age poorly. I promised that there were pictures from the Voth family from this game, and I said that my style was in question. Here's why. I think my stylist, my mom, was told me what to wear today. I'm wearing this perfect for this era K-State Nike golf shirt. That is, golf shirts were like really baggy for some reason during this time period. I'm wearing sunglasses, which I'd never wear sunglasses, and I wore khaki shorts to a football game. Here's the style right there. And that's an old, like, old style K-State hat that I'm wearing too. Not great. So that's me and my two brothers right there. Old West Side, you know, tailgating beforehand. Me and my second cousin, Chris, also, you know, he went to K-State as well, a couple years older than me. Both questionable dressers that I would say in this. Yeah. Also, you can't wear basketball shirts to football games. Nah. Or football to basketball. I'm out on that. So that's a bad look.
I'm with you. The shorts, out of everything that you just showed, though, I think that's the worst part.
Yeah, I mean, because those are like dark and probably pretty stiff. Maybe that's why I was so freaking hot. I'm wearing a collared shirt and heavy khaki shorts to a football game. Meanwhile, I mean, here's the thing. My middle brother, Matt, he's clearly the favorite, at least, you know, on one side of my parents here. So, you know, I'm having to wear this to a game. You know, Bryant doesn't have a jersey. Of course, Matt's got a Daniel Thomas jersey. Of course he gets to, you know, look like the cool one there. And then this is a great shot. This was walking out after the game. You can tell this was my mom thought, oh, isn't that so cool? The equipment truck semis right there. Let's take a picture. I'm definitely not into it. I'm now realizing it wasn't even a Daniel Thomas jersey. That's a Brandon Banks jersey that he's wearing. Even cooler than Daniel Thomas, I would say.
And are you – we got some the
Zig-Techs.
Yeah, the Zig-Techs.
Yep, yep. My brother is
rocking some – your favorite. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
In a Brandon Banks jersey?
I think I may also be wearing some Zig-Tex, but I've got to tame down like a black and gray version. But yeah, I mean, such a 2010 picture right there, is it not? Like Zig-Tex, I mean.
It really is. The only thing missing is like silly bands.
Yeah, or a fightin'. We got fightin's hanging around somewhere. I'm sure it's on somebody's neck in this picture. Yeah, that's not a great styling there. Although I will say, I don't know if it's because I'm a dad now, or I'm thinking more about like, my old ratty basketball shorts that I've had forever that feel great. I'm past the style now where I used to be like, if shorts were above your knees, I'm like, what's wrong with you? Like I can remember at a baseball practice, me and my teammates just railing on my dad for having a pair of shorts that like, they were barely above his knees, and we're like, oh, what are you doing? You know, all that. And now I'm like, I can't be walking around wearing freaking gauchos to the store or something, you know, like I need to look a little bit more put together. So I'm wondering if I'm entering the phase of my life where, and I have started to do this, you've maybe noticed it, where in more casual settings, I am turning to like my golf shorts a little bit more. Yeah. And I may still go with like just a plain t-shirt, like, you know, a nicer plain t-shirt. But I said to my wife the other day, I was like, do you think I need to transition to being like golf shirt shorts guy all the time now? Because I have found like those are the most comfortable shirts that I own on a routine basis, but I haven't gotten to it yet. I think I'm scared to make the move, but there you go. That was my what age worst.
I also have Rick Neuheisel as a coach. I love Rick Neuheisel on CBS Sports Network and think that he's really funny as an analyst. But as a coach, did not age well. And then Rich Rod at Michigan, because I remember that one of the game breaks was talking about how Rich Rod might be fired at Michigan. Well, plot twist, he was.
Yeah, that did not work out very well there. All right, anything else on what aged poorly?
No, this game was very kind of bland in terms of like what age for. I think it's because we did the 09 KU games. Like we hit on a lot of the stuff that just happened in like that era.
True. All right. Let's take a break real quick to remind everybody that you can go to cats2ireland.com for last minute info on tickets, travel, and hospitality. Your Aer Lingus trivia question today, Drew, in honor of the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. That is 22 days away. We are in game month now. In the year 2010, there was only one college football game played outside the U.S. Who played in the game and where? It did not take place in the 2010 season. It was a 2009 bowl game that was played on January 2nd, 2010. It's pretty broad. You can ask for some hints here. I can give you one very... You want the conferences that the teams played in?
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Okay, it probably isn't going to be because they played out of the Big East and the MAC.
Oh, boy. Big East and the MAC in those days.
Yeah. And do you want to try and guess what country they played the game in?
Country, I'll say... Oof. Did we have like a Bahamas Bowl back then?
No, you're heading in the wrong cardinal direction.
Okay. So was there a game in Canada?
Yep. To get warmer, you need to get cooler. The game was in Canada, the International Bowl, as it was referred to. One other hint that I might be able to give you, you know, the conferences, there was a future Heisman finalist on one of these teams.
Was Northern Illinois the MAC team?
Northern Illinois was the MAC team. Okay. Jordan Lynch was the backup quarterback for this team in this season.
And then I'm going to say, I'm trying to think of like who could have been like in a game that would be that like that level in 2010. Was it UConn and Northern Illinois?
No, it was USF and Northern Illinois, the Jim Levitt led South Florida Bulls. So there you go. South Florida won 27-3. They played it at Rogers Center in Canada, where the Blue Jays play. So there you go. That was the only international game in the calendar year of 2010 in college football.
How strange that there used to be a bowl game in Canada.
Yeah. Could you imagine? I mean, that those couldn't have been, like, South Florida team couldn't have been great. Like, no. If K-State goes 7-5 and instead of like the Rate Bowl, it's like you're going to Canada. It's like, oh, we got to get passports and go through this whole process just to go cover a 7-5 bowl game.
And it'd be like 30 degrees.
Well, it would have been inside.
Well, not during like everything else that you do for a bowl game.
Fair. Very fair. All right, let's grade the broadcasters here. The crew was Carter Blackburn, Brock Hewitt, and Mike Bellotti. They were solid. They weren't anything special. I'll give them a B, mainly because I think Blackburn's fine. Hewitt's awesome. Bellotti had some moments, but it's clear like he just didn't shine on games. He was a good studio guy. He did a lot of ESPNU studio stuff during this time, not meant for games.
I'm going to go B-. Hewitt is awesome. Carter Blackburn is fine. Bellotti was fine. They didn't really do a whole lot. Like, no. we're about to get into it, like, fully, but, like, there just wasn't a whole lot to the broadcast, period.
Yeah, I mean, the notable moments from the broadcast were me nitpicking ABC's shows for the year and then the drunk driving commercial, which it's an anti-drunk driving commercial, not a, you know, whatever. Anyways.
And then the only thing that I really have that's notable from the broadcast was what I already talked about them like being blatantly wrong about the Kevin Prince fumble. Like, they were just kind of there.
Yeah, they get a B for me. Daniel Thomas, clearly the MVP of this game for both of us. And I would say it's hard to call him underrated, but David Garrett is the other player that I wanted to give the mention to. I mean, he was all over the place on defense. And in a game where not a lot stood out in it, it felt like it was just Daniel Thomas. You had David Garrett making plays left and right. So a shout out to the late David Garrett.
So I have three guys for underrated player because I like to use this as like a time where I get to just showcase dudes that I thought really popped. David Garrett was one, obviously. Yeah. He was fantastic in this game. William Powell gets a nod from me. He did kind of take that one touchdown from Daniel Thomas, but he was still really productive. 72 yards on 6 carries is pretty nuts. And then the third player, Broderick Smith, not really for what he did as a receiver, like catching the ball, but on all of those big runs, if we really go back and like highlight the blocking down the field, a lot of it was Broderick Smith. So wanted to give him a little shout out because I'm sure that he didn't get a whole lot of love during the film
session. He was a solid underrated receiver during that time period, you know, on the 2011 team.
The one thing that I really remember about Broderick Smith's time at K-State was when he broke his leg in 2010.
Well, great memories that Drew has there. all right. The random players from this game, I got two of them for you, and it's highlighting UCLA special teams. You turn the game on and you go, oh, Jeff Locke is punting, NFL punter. Long time, you know. I think Vikings was for sure one of the teams that he punted for. And then they line up for the first kick. You're like, and Kai Forbath was the kicker in this game. Like, they had NFL kicker and punter on their team, which, you know, not necessarily positions you want your NFL talent to come from. Kevin Prince was not an NFL talent. You would have rather been at quarterback. But I was like, that would seem pretty rare that a team would have both legit NFL kicker and punter on their team at the same time. So those were my two random players from this game.
Yeah, I had both of those two written down too, because it was also insane to me that like Kai Forbath was also injured during training camp, and I wanted to know what was going on at UCLA's training camp that Kai Forbath gets hurt. Kevin Prince barely even practiced from what it sounds like, and then Neuheisel's like,
UCLA must have been really sweating midterms with Barack Obama and the Democrats there. Now, that's a joke, people. I'm not political. I just, you know, I'm showing off that my knowledge of whatever.
Then Neuheisel's like, yep, still got to get out there, guys. But the random player that I have for K-State was just something that I just hadn't thought of in a long time. Alex Rebeck.
Well, what, you hadn't thought of him since I gassed him up in the 09 KU game?
Yeah, I haven't really thought about him since.
Yeah, shout out to everybody there. Good for Kai Forbath and Jeff Locke. Biggest honors of their careers, I would say. You got any what ifs from this game? I said earlier that, like, you just kind of go, man, why didn't you just, and this is more of a bigger picture thing, but why didn't you just take the training wheels off with Colin Klein? And, like, how could you go from Colin Klein being what he was in 2011 and not really giving him the opportunity in 2010 and, like, just giving it to Carson Kaufman? Like, I don't think that this team, it probably doesn't change the amount of games that they win this season.
No,
but it maybe would have been more fun. And you also look back and you just go, I would have been kind of sick to have, like, an extra year of Colin Klein. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I need to go and evaluate a little bit more what that season looked like to try and decide, like, if Colin could have made, well, you may not lose to Baylor that year. They lost at Colorado. Like, maybe you have that type of deal. So I don't know. Maybe that's one of those deals. And they did later in the year. Like, we talked about the Texas game that they, you know, ran. They only threw it for 9 yards and Colin ran all over the place. And then the next week they stuck with him a little bit. He threw only 6 passes, but they put Kaufman back out there. And Colin ran for 141 yards in the 10-point loss at Missouri the next week. You're probably a little bit better off there. Maybe you have a game or two that swing your way if Colin's playing instead of Carson Kaufman.
But then, like, the other part of the equation is that you also probably lose this game because Klein was kind of a mess.
Maybe, but it's so tough when you only get, like, a quick look at guys and in the situation. But yes, I get what you're saying.
Like, I think that is easily, like, the what if from this, because at first my what if, before I really, like, dove into, like, the whole season stats from 2010, was like, what if you got Chris Harper on the field more? But he still ended second on the team in receiving yards, so, like, I didn't feel like that was a worthy candidate. But, like, it really is, like, what if Klein would have been ready to take the reins in 2010? Because then, like, 2011 doesn't really feel like it comes out of nowhere. Because, like, 2011 kind of feels like it came out of nowhere when you really look.
And it's just more of, like, a selfish thing, I would say, more than anything, where you look at it and go, in hindsight, it sucks that you only got 2 seasons of Colin because they were 2 awesome seasons. Yeah. And so knowing that he was there, and not only that he was there, but you got an awesome Colin Klein game in 2010. So you're like, man, why couldn't we have gotten, you know, a little bit more from him there?
And then, like, this is, like, where the what if really hits is, like, you have Colin, like, starting to come on, and then, like, you also have the 4th best running back in school history, maybe 3rd.
Yeah. I would say you also maybe don't get beat as bad against Nebraska if you have Colin.
Probably not. God, that Nebraska game, I remember being so hyped for it. And just, that was also the game Broderick Smith broke his leg.
Tough. Speaking of, you were talking about Chris Harper and the what if. Yeah, he finished the season. He caught 25 balls that season. 19 of them came in the final 5 games of the year. Including he caught his season high of passes, 5 of them in the Pinstripe Bowl against Syracuse. So there you go.
Yeah. So maybe your what if could be, what if Chris Harper got involved more? Because he really played much until Roger Smith got hurt.
Game score, I'm giving this one 6.6. It's a fine game. It's a fun game to look back on. You'd love to watch the Daniel Thomas highlights from this. There's not much else to go off of it. It's a fun deep cut if you're a K-State fan and it means something to you, but also nobody's going to, like, make fun of you or should shame you if you go, I don't even remember a lick of what happened in this game, because I really didn't either, other than knowing that Daniel Thomas had a great day. I don't remember the pacing of the game and all this other stuff, but it's a fine game. But this is the kind of score that a game between 2 middle-of-the-road teams playing in week 1 – could get. A 6.6, fine game. Score adds up for the 2010 K-State squad.
Yeah, I give this a 7. Again, the game's not going to blow you away. I mean, it didn't blow me away. We both have made jokes throughout watching this that the final score does not indicate what the game was like, because there was 21 points for the last 2 minutes of this game. But it was a fine game. Both teams played well at times. Both teams also played pretty gross football at times. Both quarterbacks were pretty banged up. But Daniel Thomas was awesome. This was the game that I think it kind of felt like we're back in terms of like Bill 2.0 and like what K-State could be. It's like, I'll give this a solid 7.
Yeah. All right. That will do it for us today. Closes out KSO Classic. Another great edition of it today. Talking 2010 K-State, UCLA. We are back again next week. Next week, we were thinking, okay, how do we replace a game we wanted to do because we can't find it. We didn't know that basketball would work that great again. So we're sticking with football, and we are doing the first true iconic game of the Chris Klieman era. Although I guess you could argue maybe it was the Mississippi State game that year, but we are going to look back at 2019 K-State, Oklahoma. Another one that involved an onside kick at the end, and it ended with one grown man pounding the turf in pure ecstasy. Who was it? Find out next week on the KSO Show.